So for this evening's talk, which is the last evening of the retreat, after having really done a beautiful work in terms of inner work and endeavor to see clearly, to connect more fully with the present moment, can you just imagine how we were with the first evening? It's quite amazing the difference of field of presence. And the deepening effect. We are about to move out again into the world. So this wonderful relationship of contemplative practice and then the unfolding. And I know that often a last evening, you know, people may have questions in relationship to how can this apply to the world, in our relationships, how we can actually manifest and express this understanding. I know a few of you have maybe some questions, and there also the aspect, the field of doubts, you know, like, there may be some enthusiasm to actually come out of the silence. And there's also maybe a little bit of unsettledness. You know, we have mixed feelings. And it's so interesting that this is so. And quite a number of you are beginners, so it's totally normal if we have this happen. And I do want to state that it's totally part of the process. So this evening I'd like to give some emphasis on this aspect that we've been cultivating, which is the aspect of self and relationship, meaning the qualities of kindness, care, compassion, and today we practiced a little bit joy, gratitude. And in relationship, really the Buddha gave a very clear picture of the importance of carrying the practice into the world. And that love and compassion, to say, qualities that are naturally manifesting in each and every human being, this quality of basic goodwill, benevolence, is actually the expression of the quality of awareness, presence, that we have been cultivating all along. That quality of mindfulness unfolds in a very clear, consistent, organic way. And the more we actually converse and dialogue with ourselves, the more we let ourselves approach even the difficulties, as I said, the shadow side, the more we can actually sense the preciousness of our presence on this planet, in the world. So when we practice metta meditation, we're actually dedicating ourselves to develop, strengthen this unconditional care, kindness. Some people like to call it love. It's fine with me if we're knowing what we're talking about, right? And there's an investigation that, of course, also includes touching the difficult parts, the difficult emotions, the torments of mind, which we have been speaking about. And slowly, slowly, we have a potential for extending our limits. Really, the possibility, the potential for more openness. And whether we know it or not, there's a sense of this happening in each and every one of us. It can be very clearly manifesting in a way that we consciously understand some aspects a little more. And underneath, there may be even layers which are may be not so known, but that continue to manifest in very mysterious ways. As I said this afternoon, the mystery of the strengthening of our own humanness, you can say, or basic goodwill. So we access these ambers. And in a way, there's a way that we actually activate qualities that are already present. It's nothing to create, nothing that comes from outside. It's a rediscovery. And so everything that has been manifesting here actually leaves with you. And I think this is very precious to know. That's why the work is so amazing, that it's not just about a nice experience, but it really is so much more in terms of wisdom, in terms of deep understanding of the operation, the way the mind, the heart works, and how we vibrate, and how we can have some tension arise when there is clinging, when there is grasping, and how when there is the mindfulness, the possibility in that very situation to release the heart from contracting, from being in a state of stress. This can be done in any moment. Not specifically with closed eyes on a cushion. In meditation, of course it's helpful. Of course here we've been having extremely precious protection. There's no doubt. People have cooked for us. There has been quiet. The scenery is beautiful. We don't need to accomplish anything. So retreat time is very special and allows us to go really much deeper. Yet it doesn't mean that this work cannot continue on a daily basis. And it does. Actually, it's so fascinating that it does. Whether we are conscious or not, sometimes, you know, I can catch myself being in the middle of a torment or a judging thought, and suddenly, whew, there's an awareness and there's the metta coming in saying, hey, wait a minute. You don't need to be hard on yourself. What are you doing here? And it's so extreme when it just takes you by surprise that in one moment suddenly you feel that, wow, yeah, being on a retreat has an effect. There's a fruit here. And often it comes in ways that are mysterious. So we stretch our hearts to include really everything. The metta practice has a very organic unfolding, and here we have been understanding that we encourage it in ourselves, then with an easy person, but it's so helpful to understand that it's universal, right? This is not personal. So there's a growing capacity to actually allow it, and it unfolds for any beings, any circumstance, right? Progressively. To the extent, and I've been asked this question, is it possible to extend or to radiate metta, kindness, care, to a person who has hurt us, for example, or with whom there is difficulty? Yes, it is possible. So we can actually extend our hearts further, and it is universal. Meaning that no being is left out. There can be an expansiveness to the extent that we can actually generate, radiate this kindness towards all beings. No matter what the circumstances are. It's a spiritual quality. So no doubt, it can be extended. To the extent which is limitless, right? A mind filled with this quality of kindness, slowly, slowly, you can understand that it has more spaciousness, rather than having a lot of judgments and aversion and right and wrong and good and bad and separation, right? In terms of many, many aspects, right? The other night I talked about having a different viewpoint with a friend, if you remember, and how there can be a sense of, yeah, if there is this type of relationship, we can move beyond. There's always a possibility to not stay in contraction. So the mind and the heart begin to move in the direction which is helpful, which is actually inclusive rather than exclusive. We move out of greed, hatred, and aversion. There's no doubt. And there's less confusion. So this is the direction. There is more pliability, more openness, more spaciousness, less judgment. And naturally, the outcome is what? More happiness and more peace. But it needs to be an experience. See, you really have a sense that there is a strengthening effect if we actually put ourselves in the experience, and there is a connection between mind, heart, and body. It's not just a mental activity where wishful thinking, it really infuses and takes root, like when you plant and there are roots that are in a plant, and then you water the seeds, and that tree is really firmly established in the earth, in the ground. So these qualities, really, as we practice them, as we actually are having a way that we bring them again and again into our own practice, will grow. Often people tell me, I understand, it's quite beautiful what you're saying. But I feel that in my life, I don't deserve. And it's unimaginable. You know, there's this very famous story for the Dalai Lama who, he says, in Western society, people feel they don't deserve happiness. And he really doesn't understand what that can mean because it's totally out of his worldview. And so fundamentally, we are, in a way, thinking that we're unworthy of love. And this is exactly where I was standing when I began, you know. Instead of taking something which is so helpful, and now I can say, you know, so many years later, it's amazing. But so much resistance. So much resistance. I would just numb out, you know. Metta session, go to sleep. And I wasn't tired at all, you know. It wasn't tiredness. It was just like numbing out. I don't want this. Until I really inquired, what's the resistance here? And one phrase came up, I don't deserve it. And it's very common, actually. How is it that we say that we don't deserve kindness or care? Well, we, maybe it's not in Finland, I don't know. This is a Swiss attitude. But it's true that we live in a society where, in a way, self-hatred, which is equivalent to guilt, right, is an epidemic. Even more so that if it's that is happening, please remember metta. It's so helpful to open up, to allow for the awareness to actually meet what is, to receive experience rather than react against experience. And the Buddha's line, which I have kept with me ever since my very first retreat, listen to these words. You can search the world over and over and not find anyone more deserving of love than yourself. Every time I say it, I'm going to It's amazing. It's just so touching. And when I really heard these words and read these words, I thought, wow, it's so amazing. Why not take something which is beneficial? Why not? And it took some time. And for each one of us, we have the conditions, causes and conditions that are the ones that they are. And we work with them. And slowly, slowly, there, I can assure you, I give you my whole faith and trust in this practice that things can shift, things can move on. It's possible. And that the condition of today, if it has been hard in relationship to this, it can change, really. So the vipassana, the awareness, the mindfulness, and these practices, which are a little more linked to the heart, the openness and the kindness, the care, the compassion, really are balanced. Vipassana, as you know, encourages us to be able to be more in presence, be with our experience without trying to change it, right? And thereby, little by little, come to allow experience without grasping. This is, right, the core teaching, okay? So there's no doubt from that side, we make peace with ourselves. But so much of the time, there's often a lot of resistance. So this is why these practices help soften the material. It's really like a material. There's a substance. It's rigid and it's hard, and it can help the mind be pliable. So the care to actually more consciously, by wishing ourselves well, by intending to take another person as a support, we allow for this to slowly, slowly, slowly change. And in the teachings, it said that it's like a metal that you put to burn and it softens. Right? It's pliable. So there's a sense of connection. There's a sense of inclusiveness. The proximate cause is basic goodness, to actually remember that we have good qualities. Each and every one of us has done an act of generosity in our life. So to take that step, to take that step forward. So this is an embrace. More and more are we allowing ourselves to move from reactivity to receptivity. Very basic. But so much change. The other aspect is, I don't deserve it. That's one. Then the other attitude is, oh, but it's selfish to be giving myself so much time. You know, the world needs help. Yes, definitely the world needs help. I totally agree with you. Yet, what we see as we get really more and more clear about what are the holdings, what are the emotional patterns, what are the difficulties, and we touch this, the more we understand about our own conditions, the more we understand and are willing to look into our own hearts and minds and understand the cause of the suffering and the way to liberation, the more we understand about ourselves, the more we understand about others. There's an interconnectedness. So it's everything except selfishness, right? Then we can share. We don't contain it. It's a natural movement of expression of this kindness that we have brought for ourselves. Metta is an antidote, clearly in the teachings, to fear and aversion, fear and anger. Fear and anger, if there is fear and anger, metta is the antidote. So, originally, the Buddha taught to the monks this very teaching for people who have a lot of fear. And actually, this is exactly what I was noticing. I was resistant at first when I said, oh, I don't want to, I numb out. I had a resistance to actually feel my own fears. I didn't want to go there. We don't want to go there because we didn't have a help. I didn't have a help. I didn't know how to. And when, really with a lot of insistence, I can tell you I had a very patient teacher. Thank goodness. I don't know how many interviews I had where I said, you know, maybe you should do metta one time, two times. But Vipassana will do it. You know, the wisdom will do it. If only I understand, it's going to happen. And it was so fascinating because as much as I was trying to be with the practice and very diligent yogi, you know, really doing the walking the city, the more I was going on, the more there was some rigidity in my heart, in my mind, and the more I was understanding that something was not okay. Until it was really revealed to me that there was fear. And I thought, oh, okay, I don't want to go deeper because there was a fear of the fear. Fear of touching the fear, which is completely normal. And this is why the attitude of care and kindness, the metta, the way that actually we have been a little bit discovering this quality, to care about the fear rather than to have aversion to fear, it's a whole different relationship. And it opened up a huge field of unknown. But so interesting, the practice after that, right? So monks were so afraid of meditating in the forest, inhabited by tree spirits. And the spirits resented them. So they tried to scare the monks out of the place, remember? So how do they do? Of course, spirits, they have a lot of power, right? So they had terrifying visions, awful smells, shrieking noises. And the monks, can you imagine if we had this here? We wouldn't be here anymore. So they ran back to the Buddha and they said, give us another place to meditate. Another forest. And the monks, the Buddha said, no, you go back to to the same forest, but I'm going to give you the protection that you need. Okay? And so he gave them, and this is the very first time that the Buddha taught metta practice. He gave them and he said, practice loving kindness and you will see the effect of that experience. And of course, you know, like any beautiful stories coming from the Buddha, right? It worked. And not only did the tree spirits calm down, but they were so moved by the metta energy that they vowed to serve the monks. But as much as it can be a legend, it's quite amazing actually that this is exactly the effect of metta practice if one has had a long-term relationship with this quality. It's amazing. Metta is a huge protection. As much as Vipassana gives us awareness and the strength to see clearly, the metta is a protective field. Where actually, there's a softening of the heart, there's an openness to not have so much fear inside ourselves, but this also means so much less fear of others. You see what it means? That the fear, of course, if it tends to drop away, then there's so much more ability to be in connection and to see what we have in common, the interconnectedness, rather than always have this defense system, this barrier that we need to protect ourselves from others because we really sense that, ooh, if I open up, what's going to happen? You know? And of course, it's a false protection. It's a barrier. This is painful. And when we begin to actually really practice in a way that we open up, and over time, we sense this. So imagine having a quality of sphere which actually is giving you a protection which allows people in, which allows the universe to unfold in a way that we don't need conditions to be a certain way, that there's openness, that we can actually meet each other. It's as important as that, that very specific effect or impact which this practice has. And what's so amazing is that it can be done anywhere. It's so easy in your daily lives to bring in this practice. You know, I don't know if you have traffic jam in where you live, but people in their cars, in my own city, it's totally amazing. Since a year, I mean, horrible traffic. And so now I've really given the meditators, do metta in your car when it stops, rather than get irritated, frustrated. And at least, I don't know, quite a number of them have come back and said, it's amazing. It's a whole different attitude that I have when I'm in my car. So the metta practice, just to actually remember a phrase of, oh, may these people that are in their cars be happy, be safe, be well, wherever you are, you're in a line, and you're waiting for something. Instead of having these thoughts which are irritating, you'll have kind thoughts. It has an impact. And science is saying this. If you read books about now, you know, loving kindness and how this whole neuroscience thing is actually proving, I don't know if it's proof of evidence, but anyway, saying how much we can actually change, right? The effects on the brain, and there's no doubt that it's happening. At least there's a benefit. Now, in terms of the difference between metta and compassion, I've been asked this question. Of course, one of the existential questions of being human is how to deal today. And it's so huge. The immense amount of suffering, of pain that there is in this world. You know, there's personal pains, people that are so clearly without a home, without a job, without food, more and more refugees. It's totally amazing. So communities on a global scale, you can actually see today more than maybe 20 years ago, the suffering that is manifesting. This is the side and the aspect of compassion. So what is the difference? Because I know that there are new people, and I do want to express the difference between the two. Metta, as you've seen, is uplifting. It really is a way that we are strengthening the power of goodwill. Benevolence, right? May I or you be happy, be well, and it's uplifting. It really is driving force towards happiness. Compassion is coming forth from this place of metta, where the basic goodwill, when it's in tune and in sync, it can naturally flow in the presence of suffering, in the presence of pain. Right? So it's the same quality. Yeah? It's the same quality. You have a hand, you have two sides. One side is metta, goodwill, and you really reinforce, may you be well, may I be well. And the other side will say, may you be free of pain, may you be free of suffering. Right? So it's the same care, but when there is the presence of pain or suffering, metta flows. There's an openness of heart, rather than a closing. So compassion is a tender, caring quality of heart, which quivers, and it says it's quivering in the presence of pain, quivering because it's open. It feels the pain, yet it doesn't have the aversion. This is huge. This is why when we begin, and actually we've definitely, each and every one of us, have practiced compassion on this retreat. The very fact that when you practice vipassana and you have body pain, right, and you allow yourself to be touched by the physical pain, and you are in a relationship where you don't close down and contract, and slowly, slowly, because of the care, the kindness, you can actually meet what it is, there's compassion. So here, there's not a desire to change the experience, right? We're not in a realm where we are with something to change it or to fix it. It's just the care. Just the care and the kindness. It's enough. See? Because the idea as a value or in a spiritual realm, it's not to fix a problem. Here there is no problem. It's the human condition, which is the way that it is, right? But we can actually be with. And the more we are being with, the more there's a sense of possibility of seeing that it's okay, that we can connect with this too. So this again, it's a driving force which begins with ourself, and then we can actually nourish this dimension towards other beings. It even is a very interesting aspect where when there is the presence of pain and compassion, true compassion is present, it's said that it's sweet and there can be a pleasant feeling tone. To that extent. Do you understand what I'm meaning? Yeah? Rather than unpleasant feeling tone. Because of the connection we feel. That it's okay to feel what it is that is happening, and there's an aliveness, which means that there is not the normal attitude of closing down. So there isn't separation. We're actually staying in connection. And therefore, the fullness of feeling, the vulnerability maybe, of the human condition, moves us. And this is the quivering. It's the tenderness. Now the compassion in terms of this tradition is different from despair or grief. Right? Despair or grief have some sense where we're overly, terribly overcome by the situation. We're kind of overwhelmed. With compassion, it's possible to have a stand where we're not burdened. Why? Because the wisdom is feeding this very quality. There's the balance of the equanimity, which is wisdom. There's a balance. What's the equanimity? No greed, no aversion. No attachment, no aversion. So there's a possibility of staying present. So, of course, in this field of investigation, and as we approach, right, when I had the fear, for example, and that's just an example, for quite some time there was grief, and there was despair, and there was self-pity. Oh, poor me. I've got so much fear, and it's so terrible, and yeah, all of that was there in the scheme of things for a certain period. And then it shifts from one moment, wow, grief, and then let me open to this. Ooh, and there's a sweetness. It's poignant. You really feel the vulnerability, but the poignancy of this human heart. And the care, the metta, and the kindness is actually allowing the acceptance. So true compassion contains no aversion. That's kind of the natural response that we care to grow with. And when we expose ourselves to the reactions, slowly, slowly, we'll be able at times to have this. It's slow, many few little moments, right? We can't have an ideal, but in the reality, this is what is happening. And then, of course, the next moment, okay, again, why me? Why should I suffer like this? I'm sure nobody else is suffering in this way, you know? I mean, all these phrases that we probably have had, right? I'm the only one suffering on my cushion and everybody else is in bliss. And everybody that is in here in this room thinks the same of the other one, you know? And it's just so fascinating because we're all in the same boat. So by developing compassion, we cultivate a wider and wider field of experience. And the more there's openness, the more there's a possibility to receive. There's receptivity. And then we can understand that life has the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows, as the Taoists say. It's not just one. And this is why we actually cultivated today gratitude practice, joy. It's not just working on one side, which is only seeing and looking and really deepening our connection with suffering. If it's imbalanced, then there's no doubt we get very tired, even exhausted. So at times it's so important to nourish the beauty, nourish the goodness. And Pema Chodron says this, when there is pain, it is love or loving kindness that gives birth to a natural compassion. The compassionate heart holds the pain and sorrow of our life. And then progressively of all beings. And it is the tenderness that can hold it. The tenderness, gentleness. It is this tender heart that has the power to transform the world. So it's quite amazing. I feel it's such a blessing to be able to do this work, to be here together. And to actually have had the opportunity to really deeply understand the meaning of the human condition. Even if at times not easy, yet so meaningful. So no aversion or less aversion. And the more we walk on this path, the more we can sense the importance of the care. To take care, to nourish this care. And we bring this out in the world. Engaging in a way that we're a little less judgmental towards others. A little more kind, a little more patient, a little more open. And this is going to start, you know, with one person. And there are going to be struggles. It's not an idealistic view. And we learn. And we learn. And we learn. So this sense of interconnectedness can actually manifest through each and every quality that we've been nourishing. Mindfulness helps connect. No doubt patience helps connect. A quality of grounded presence in the body helps connect. Connect to the earth, connect to nature, connect when you listen to a friend, when you're actually there for this person. The very fact of having been in silence also gives us this trust that we don't need to constantly speak when we're with another person. And it's amazing how we can be a little bit more at ease in relationship to having a moment and taking the time to relate from a place of what does this situation call for? And to evaluate before we attend to it, out of a place of automatic pilot. So many different types of responses. So what happens really is that we learn very progressively and I feel intuitively, this is totally organic, that what we're learning the most is not to separate ourselves from the outside. That feeling of connection with life and others, with ourself, grows. And this is what practice reveals. So many people have shared this. You know? So, the compassion, the kindness that we develop, engaging and staying engaged, begins to be the place where we learn to relate, to stay in connection. And then we learn, where is this connection? Where is this care needed? Where is it that I can help? What is the sense of purpose? And what happens is that there's not only a way that we are cultivating all these qualities for ourselves, but we move out of self-centeredness. And so much more availability for service, for kindness towards others, for help. The Dalai Lama said really something which is very well known, but he says for himself, more and more are we seeing now the difficulties with religions, right? And some time ago, he said, the essence of all religions is love, compassion, and tolerance. If all religions had that as their roots, we would get together, right, and have fun, rather than kill each other, right? Love, compassion, and tolerance. And he adds, kindness is my true religion. How meaningful for this man to say this. So we can understand the depth of this very quality. And it's true that it's important to, for me to just state this, because when we do the practice, it looks a little silly, no? When you repeat a phrase and then, yeah, you continue and it's just like, oh, wow, this is kind of being in a kindergarten. And yet it's just so deep when you really are beginning to enable. It's a shift of consciousness. It really is a totally incredible shift of allowing our minds to be in a place where there's less judgment and so much more access to something else. We relearn, we rediscover the basic goodness, because this is exactly what is happening. So there's different ways of looking at this kindness. The Buddha often talked of kindness as a life lived with sila. And sila is virtue. To bring in ethical living, living our lives in such a manner as that we bring peace rather than suffering. Virtue, you can say, is kindness as a generosity of heart which offers to ourselves and to the world the gift of harmlessness. To not harm. The gift of harmlessness really fuels then the ability to live with fearlessness. These two go together. If we're not afraid to be harmed by someone, there's no reason to have fear. That's the basis, the ground of really deep qualities of kindness and compassion and love, as he says. Right? So, this occupies a very central place in the Buddha's teachings, as in all spiritual, I think, work, right? How we live, how we behave with each other, how we try to do the best we can. And the principle of non-harming is really based in what causes suffering and what causes peace. This is the baseline, right? And it's intentional, right? I mean, just the other day, it seems I hurt someone on an email. I had absolutely no intention to hurt this person. Actually, with emails, now I'm being very careful, and I reread them before sending it, you know? And so I reread this email, and I thought it was completely okay. And it seemed, well, it wasn't received well. It happens, right? Thank goodness this person I met 2 days later, and we actually had a discussion about this. And it was just another view. And the belief that I was seeing something in a way that I had not seen, but that the person was projecting onto me. It happens, right? So it's unintentional. The cause of harm here is really that you want to hurt someone, right? This is the way of virtue. So it happens. So what do you do when this misunderstanding, of circumstances happens? If there is this base of care and kindness and compassion, when I heard this person, I said, oh, really? And the movement of the heart was immediate. I'm sorry. I really didn't mean to hurt you. The obvious response. Not so easy to do. If we haven't had, you know, like an understanding and a way that there is openness and receptivity. And I'm not saying that I'm always able to do it this way. But here it was a small event, okay? So it was possible. And okay, a done deal. It was gone. So this is, hopefully, the attitude. With bigger issues, may take more time, and a way that we actually sense the situation. When is it appropriate? What are the words that can be helpful? So there's a whole attitude with which we can actually embrace the situation, right? But it's always manifesting out of compassion. We don't wish to cause harm, because what we understand is harming another being, we think, right? Or having vengeance on the other person. Actually, the Buddha is very clear, we're the one who is hurting. Right? He says, holding on to anger, and you have an iron coal. You want to throw the iron coal at the other person. Who's holding it in the hand? So there's a really great sense of understanding that we're not in peace. There's a burden in the mind. There's worry. Right? So there's a real sense of interconnectedness here. It's not them and then we're out. It's not that simple. And this is, with practice, we begin to sense this very deeply, not only in our mind, but in our gut. So in terms of this, kindness applied to living a life of harmlessness, which leads to fearlessness, Charlotte Jokubek says, practice can be stated very simply. It is slowly, slowly moving from a life of hurting myself and others to a life of not hurting myself and others. So we do the best we can, and it's not going to be perfect. It cannot, because causes and conditions are what they are. People are what they are. We are what we are, right? So it's normal. Doing good and kindness also reflects as generosity. So ethical conduct, and then there's this whole aspect of generosity, giving of ourselves, of our energy, service, a meaningful endeavor to actually relate from a place of non-grasping. Right? We've been talking about how when greed is present, there's a lot of self-centeredness, right? When we open the hand, it's really having a closed fist, and you open the hand, and very clearly there's a movement of generosity. As I said, non-greed is transformed into selfless generosity. Dana, generosity, is said to be the highest spiritual perfection. Makes a huge shift in our world view, based exactly on that in interconnectedness. Right? So often my teacher would say, okay, in your daily life, it's hard to practice vipassana. And I said, yeah, well, it's not easy, you know. I mean, taking half hour to do the practice vipassana. And he said, okay, I'm going to give you a easier practice. He said, it comes to the same. And he would say, always, in every single one of us, he would say, practice generosity. Look where there's a need. Look where there's someone who is in need. Help. Help. Serve. And when we help and we serve, and there's an attitude of, yeah, there's a person here in need, there's someone that's calling for something, naturally, there's a manifestation of non-greed. Right? We're not fueling the craving, or what can I get from this? We actually are transforming our practice in a way that we alleviate suffering. The suffering of another person, but also our own. So this is great. I mean, it serves two people or more. So it's fantastic, right? So this is a shift, like, what can I get from this situation? You know, it's just so narrow-minded, and this whole consumerism in this world today, all about, you know, quality of life being equated to how much we earn, how much we get, how much money we have. It's totally insane, actually. But, so it's really a transformation from what can I get from this situation to what does this situation call for? Do you really sense the difference? Where there's so much self-centeredness to what is the need for this situation? What's the sense of purpose? And so our practice here is definitely in sync with the world. The practice of giving aids into the liberation of the mind. And there's so many forms of dana, so many forms of generosity, right? You can give of your time. You can give of your energy. You can give to your community. You can serve this very community. There's no way that there isn't a place, right? Something that we can do to actually connect and help each other. And the beauty of this is that everybody benefits. So it's onward leading towards happiness. And that's what's so amazing. Not only an antidote from craving. Shantideva, whatever joy there is in this world all comes from desiring others to be happy. And whatever suffering there is in this world all comes from wanting only pleasure for ourselves. So immediate and so clear, you know? So we learn ways to become free of suffering and encourage happiness. And all these are actual practices. We strengthen them, we continue to grow, and we can offer freedom to those around us. Gandhi said, I believe if one person gains spirituality, the whole world gains that much. It's so great. It's just one drop, but it's one more drop. And if one person fails, the whole world fails to that extent. You know, and this word of spirituality, I think it has to be very open-minded, right? There's many, many, many aspects, and we can really hold it in a very broad way, right? It's just taking care of our human condition. Out of, doesn't need to be traditional. You notice there wasn't any ritual. There was really a sense of very clear perspective of open-mindedness in relationship to the endeavor of what we develop and universal qualities. Any tradition will have kindness, care, love, generosity, wisdom, mindfulness, being more present. So we can have, you know, our own faith and move on and clearly have this endeavor to wake up. So now this question, and I'm going to end with this question about how we can help the world and how it's so important for us to be active in the world. And so many young people today, you know, are questioning. They can't stay in place or stay in their own life because it's so unbearable to actually be the witness of the suffering that is happening. Right? So we can sense this. I have been in touch with a few. So there's a call to do something, no doubt. But there's also the importance of actually knowing from which place we actually act. And the Buddha was very clear in terms of social activism or social justice. And he was really someone who wasn't at all only practicing for himself and in silence. He was very active, right? Really stating that poverty is the cause of immorality and crimes, and if there's thieves and falsehood and violence, it's because people are not given the status that they should have, right? And farmers should be given property or land. So there are many sutras where there's a real sense of endeavor and very strong action from his part for equality and justice and nonviolence. But as we're here and as we're actually enabling this work, and of course, I'm going to say things in relationship to what we have done, of course, right? I would like to state Larry Rosenberg, which is a senior teacher from this Vipassana tradition, who is 82 today, and he retired from where I practiced a long time. And he says these words. He says, contemplative practice is vital before and while engaging in social activism. He asked his students, have you taken care of your own greed? Of the anger that is inside you? If not, work on that first, and any action you undertake on behalf of others will then be far more effective. Why? Because we'll have the power, the strength, to actually know from which place we're engaging in matters that are not easy, right? Where there are situations which call forth some sense of wisdom, some sense of compassion, some sense of care and kindness. So both. But it's not an either or. And definitely not just going out and doing it without the ground of some inner work. At least this is how I see it. And I think how any teacher who will have had years of Dharma practice, you can say, will offer you the words that work on ourself is really the ground for then enabling action and service in whatever form it may take. The Dalai Lama says, don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive. And then go out and do that. Because what the world needs is more people who come alive. Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive. So in a way, we have really given ourselves the potential and the possibility to wake up, right? Vipassana, mindfulness, we wake up. Every moment we wake up, there's a way that we see more clearly, we see more deeply, we see the holdings and we see the reactivity and we understand the resistance and we move through it. And slowly, slowly, there's a way that we feel more alive. And I'm sure every one of us, at least if it's not this moment, have felt moments where we have felt more alive, right? So much more alive. So ultimately, it's so important to remember that the essential piece here is to wake up, to not go back to sleep. Do you have enough energy to listen to a little story? Yeah? I know I'm over time, but should you need to go out, go out. But this is really it's an example of acts of generosity and kindness. You know, there are many, many ways, actually, that we can see. In the media, we have so much bad news, right? But there's so many ways. If you look, you'll find plenty of good, good news, right? And one of it is a website which is called helpothers.org. I don't know if you know it, but there are acts of kindness. And it's helping practicing generosity. And I really go very often on this website. It's just a way of feeling connected to the goodness of this world. And it's quite amazing, actually, that every single day there are acts of kindness and people connect with each other. And one of these stories is this one and how it ripples. So I'm going to read this. This is a woman who says, I haven't held a job since April due to multiple health issues. I currently draw disability, but am having trouble finding money at the end of the month. So I decided I would look for a part-time job. I have been applying, interviewing since July with no prospects. I have been told mostly that I'm overqualified or they need a full-time. I've been getting pretty discouraged. I started my random act of kindness, going to the website. For me personally, she says, not to get anything back, but just to have a good feeling. With no job prospects and with the winter coming, meaning higher utility cost, I had been feeling pretty down. I was actually asking myself, why can't someone be kind enough to take me on as an employee? This past Tuesday evening, it was freezing cold outside, and as I was waiting at a city bus stop, I was noticing a young woman walking by the bus stop. She had a t-shirt and flip-flops on. She also was wearing several hospital bracelets. I asked her her name and if she had a coat or anywhere to go. She quickly told me she had lost her apartment because she lost her job, then got very sick and was put into the hospital. She had no family in the area and didn't even know where she was going to sleep that night. I dug in my purse and took out some bus tickets and $5 so she could get something to eat. I then took off my jacket and tennis shoes and gave them to her. I said, "These are little, big, but they should keep you warm." She looked at me and said, "Aren't you going to be cold?" I told her, "Me being cold for 15 minutes until I get to my place is worth it if I know you will be a little warmer for wherever you end up." She cried and thanked me with a hug. Then after I got on the bus, that's when the miracle of spreading kindness happened. I stepped up to pay the fare, and the bus driver says, "Ma'am, I saw what you just did, and your fare is on me," meaning he pays the ticket, right? "Even though technically we aren't supposed to let you get on the bus without shoes," he said with a wink. I went to sit down, and this lady, who was dressed in a very professional business suit, calls me over to her seat. She says, "I want to know the name of the person who just did the most inspiring thing I have ever seen." I told her my name, and she's like, "What can I do for you to give back what I just witnessed?" It's amazing, interconnectedness. I jokingly said, "A paying job would be nice." And she said, "I might be able to work something out." She asked for my name and number and said she would call me the next day. The next day she calls me and says that she has a part-time administrative assistant position open in her company and wants me to come in and meet with the manager today. It turned out the lady was the head HR person for this company. I went in for the interview and got a call that afternoon. I started Monday morning at 9. Thank you all for inspiring me to keep passing the kindness on. You never know how amazing at a bus stop. She was awake. She was in a very troubled condition, no job, yet immediately care, kindness, metta, presence. It's amazing. And how it all unfolded for her. These are true stories. So you can go helpothers.org. See? Sometimes it's very beneficial to actually connect it to the world, because it's not only bad news. You know, they show you the horrible stuff, but there's so many beautiful things happening. So thank you all for listening. 20 minutes to the next sit.